Chapter 5. I held the wheel with my knee and opened up my shirt and saw where Mr. Singh bit me. It was quite a bite, and I put iodine on it, and then I sat there steering and wondering whether a bite from a Chinaman was poisonous, and listened to her running nice and smooth and the water washing along her, and I figured, hell no, that bite wasn't poisonous. A man like that Mr. Singh probably scrubbed his teeth 2 or 3 times a day. Some Mr. Singh. He certainly wasn't much of a businessman. Maybe he was. Maybe he just trusted me. I tell you, I couldn't figure him. Well, now it was all simple except for Eddie. Because he's a rummy, he'll talk when he gets hot. I sat there steering and I looked at him and I thought, hell, he's as well off dead as the way he is, and then I'm all clear. When I found he was on board, I decided I'd have to do away with him. But then when everything had come out so nice, I didn't have the heart. But looking at him lying there, it certainly was a temptation. But then I thought there's no sense spoiling it by doing something you'd be sorry for afterwards. Then I started to think he wasn't even on the crew list, and I'd have to pay a fine for bringing him in, and I didn't know how to consider him. Well, I had plenty of time to think about it, and I held her on her course, and every once in a while I'd take a drink out of the bottle he'd brought on board. There wasn't much in it, and when I'd finished it, I opened up the only one I had left, and I tell you, I felt pretty good steering, and it was a pretty night to cross. It had turned out a good trip, all right, finally, even though it had looked plenty bad plenty of times. When it got daylight, Eddie woke up. He said he felt terrible. "Take the wheel a minute," I told him. "I want to look around." I went back to the stern and threw a little water on her, but she was perfectly clean. I scrubbed the brush over the side. I unloaded the guns and stowed them below, but I still kept the gun on my belt. It was fresh and nice as you want it below. No smell at all. A little water had come in through the starboard port onto one of the bunks was all, so I shut the ports. There wasn't a custom house officer in the world could smell chink in her now. I saw the clearance papers in the net bag hanging up under her framed license where I'd shoved them when I came on board, and I took them out to look them over. Then I went up to the cockpit. "Listen," I said, "how did you get on the crew list?"
"I met the broker when he was leaving for the consulate and told him I was going."
"God looks after rummies," I told him, and I took the .38 off and stowed it down below. I made some coffee down below, and then I came up and took the wheel. "There's coffee below," I told him.
"Brother, coffee wouldn't do me any good."
"You know you had to be sorry for him. He certainly looked bad." About 9 o'clock, we saw the sand key light just about dead ahead. We'd seen tankers going up the gulf for quite a while. "We'll be in a couple of hours now," I said to him. "I'm going to give you the same $4 a day just as if Johnson had paid."
"How much did you get out of last night?"
he asked me. "Only 600, I told him. I don't know whether he believed me or not.
"Don't I share in it?"
"That's your share," I told him, "what I just told you. And if you ever open your mouth about last night, I'll hear of it, and I'll do away with you."
"You know I'm no squealer, Harry."
"You're a rummy. But no matter how rum-dum you get, if you ever talk about that, I promise you."
"I'm a good man," he said. "You oughtn't to talk to me like that."
"They can't make it fast enough to keep you a good man," I told him. But I didn't worry about him anymore because who was going to believe him? Mr. Singh wouldn't make any complaints. The Chinks weren't going to. You know the boy that sculled them out wasn't. He wouldn't want to get himself in trouble. Eddie would mouth about it sooner or later maybe, but who believes a rummy? Why, who could prove anything? Naturally, it would have made plenty more talk when they saw his name on the crew list. That was luck for me, all right. I could have said he fell overboard, but it makes plenty talk. Plenty of luck for Eddie, too. Plenty of luck, all right. Then we came to the edge of the stream, and the water quit being blue and was light and greenish, and inside I could see the stakes on the eastern and the western dry rocks, and the wireless masts at Key West, and the La Concha Hotel up high out of all the low houses, and plenty smoke from out where they're burning garbage. Sand Key Light was plenty close now, and you could see the boathouse, and the little dock alongside the light, and I knew we were only 40 minutes away now, and I felt good to be getting back. and I had a good steak now for the summertime. "What do you say about a drink, Eddie?" I said to him. "Ah, Harry," he said, "I always knew you were my pal." That night I was sitting in the living room smoking a cigar and drinking a whiskey and water and listening to Gracie Allen on the radio. The girls had gone to the show, and sitting there I felt sleepy and I felt good. There was somebody at the front door, and Marie, my wife, got up from where she was sitting and went to it. She came back and said, "It's that rummy, Eddie Marshall. He says he's got to see you." "Tell him to get out before I run him out," I told her. She came back in and sat down, and looking out the window where I was sitting with my feet up, I could see Eddie going along the road under the arc light with another rummy he'd picked up, the two of them swaying, and their shadows from the arc light swaying worse. "Poor goddamn rummies," Marie said. "I pity a rummy." "He's a lucky rummy." "There ain't any lucky rummies," Marie said. "You know that, Harry." "No," I said. "I guess there aren't."